Most mathematicians agree great math should be elegant. If that's the case, it's hard to beat the ancient tradition of Sengoku, or Japanese temple geometry. According to physicist Tony Rothman, the tradition flourished between the 16th and 1700s, Japan's period of isolation from the West.
All manner of people would actually paint geometry problems on wooden tablets and hang them in Buddhist and Shinto shrines all over Japan.
Do you know why they were hung there? Was this for the enjoyment of others? Was this a form of devotion?
I think the probable answer is both. The tradition of hanging tablets in temples goes way back in Japan, far earlier than the 17th century. If you weren't rich enough to donate a horse to the temple, you might paint a picture of a horse on a tablet and hang that in the temple in place. So yeah, these were devotional offerings. On the other hand, I think there's a good chance that a lot of these were hung as challenges to other worshippers. See if you can solve this one.
You've seen many of these tablets in their various places. Can you describe one for me, please?
It's a wooden board with a problem painted on it, usually in very bright colors, blue, red, orange, yellow. Most of them, however, contain multiple problems, some several dozen, and these are very long boards. They can be 12 or 15 feet long by, you know, 3 or 4 feet, and they tend to be hung under the eaves of various temples. They're often elaborately decorated. There's one that's gilded, shines a lot. There's another one that has a carved wooden dragon surrounding it as a frame, so it's extraordinarily beautiful.
But it's so different from what you've come to expect. I mean, in other religions, people have made sacrifices. In Hindu temples, fruit and flowers are offered. Often in churches, you'll find candles lit and that kind of thing. But mathematics, that's unusual.
Well, it's not only unusual, I would say it's unique in world tradition. I don't know of any other country where this takes place. On the other hand, you might say that given the hours that must have gone into solving these things, it is a sacrifice.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the time. You said this flourished in a time when Japan was cut off from the rest of the world.
Well, that's the most remarkable thing about it. If maybe I can tell you a slightly circuitous story that's amusing about how I ran into these. In 1989, one day I dropped in on Freeman Dyson at the Institute for Advanced Study, and he handed me this book that he had just received. And it said Japanese temple geometry problems, and I had the faintest idea of what this was about. I started leafing through this book, and he was watching merrily as my jaw dropped lower and lower. The first thing you notice about these problems is how foreign they look. They don't look anything like the kind of problems you find in American high school geometry texts, much more complicated, elaborate, artistic. They look Japanese, you know. The second thing you notice is how beautiful they are. Some of them were clearly first designed as works of art. They look like origami, paper foldings. And somebody probably said, well, let's see what mathematical relationships we can discover in this. And the third thing you notice is just how bloody difficult most of them seem. You know, Freeman was standing there laughing, you know, as I was perusing this book. It was just impossible, some of these problems. And what is amazing is that they did spring up during this period, during the Tokugawa shogunate in the 17th century, when by imperial decree, Japan had been totally isolated from the West. And I think that explains this very peculiar flavor they have and why they're so different than all other problems. But it's a good argument for an isolationist policy, because during this period, which was known as the Genroku period, this was precisely when haiku reached the pinnacle of its development, kabuki, no drama, tea ceremonies, flower arrangings, the floating world pictures, all the traditions that we're, you know, accustomed to thinking about in regard to Japan reached their pinnacle at this point. And it's hard to deny, I think, that this whole tradition, which is known as wasan, the native mathematics, was a result of this policy of isolation.
How does this math compare to Western math of the same period?
Well, it is ordinary geometry. You know, rules of mathematics are universal, and so there's no what can I say? There's no sort of supernatural elements in this. It's Euclidean geometry. Anybody versed in Euclidean geometry in principle can solve these problems. What's different about Western problems is just sort of the style, the figures themselves, and the techniques that the Japanese of that period used to solve them. They had this thing about high-degree equations. You know, in high school, we're taught to solve quadratic equations, and, you know, maybe if you're lucky, you'll have run into a quartic equation, you know, fourth-degree equation. Some of the equations involved in solving these things are of higher than 1,000 degree, you know.
So are they all difficult? Are all the sangaku beyond ordinary solution?
Not at all. In fact, it's, I think, important to mention one of the loveliest things about this whole tradition is they seem to have been created by all manner of people. Most were probably created by the samurai warriors, who were an educated class of people. But there are also problems signed by merchants and women and children of 13 years of age. And some of them are quite simple. They, you know, any first-year geometry student could solve.
Can you give me an example of the kind of problem that's shown in the tablets?
Well, you know, in an American text, you might have a problem that involves, say, a triangle inscribed in a circle, okay, and you're trying to find out some relationship between the side of the triangle and the diameter of the circle or something like that. You know, in these temple geometry problems, you might have something that resembles that, except instead of one circle, you might have 36 circles of different sizes all inscribed within the triangle and within each other, and you're supposed to find a relationship between the, you know, 16th largest circle and the side of the triangle or something like that, you know.
What about one of the more difficult problems? What might that involve?
Well, they have some three-dimensional problems, which in fact predated some fairly well-known theorems in the West. For instance, you might imagine a sphere, and inside this outer sphere you inscribe two other spheres of arbitrary size, but just so they're touching each other, if you can imagine that. And then around the waist of those two inner spheres, you inscribe a necklace of more spheres. And the problem asks, well, how many spheres does that necklace contain? And it turns out the answer is 6. And this was proven in the 20th century by a famous chemist, Frederick Soddy, who along with Rutherford discovered radioactivity. It's known as the Hottie Sextlet theorem. But this was found on a Sangaku tablet dating from the early 19th century. And to do this problem, I've had to enlist some rather sophisticated techniques that are simply not taught in high school or college. It's a bit of a mystery how these Japanese peasants would have gone about doing this. To the best of my knowledge, only one has been found in error.
Tony Rothman teaches physics at Bryn Mawr College.